All right. And so next up on our agenda tonight, you may have heard of this person. She has spoken to us a couple of times. She's helped to guide us through several things the last few years. It is our president, Judy Wilkinson. So, Judy, would you, if you're muted, would you unmute
No,
yourself?
I'm thank you so much, Gabe. You can hear me, right?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay.
So I
Good
will turn it over to
evening.
you to speak for a while and let people not hear from me for a bit.
Well, thank you again, Gabe. And I've been so moved by all the remarks that people have made about those we've lost in the last year. There is nothing more important than our history and those who have shared it with us. Good evening, CCB members and friends, those assembled here in our Zoom room, and those joining us far and wide on ACB Radio. Our convention theme is CCB's 2020 Vision for the Future. Well, my mind's eye definitely has 2020 vision as I picture myself and fellow officers sitting at the head table with members, colleagues, and friends scattered throughout the ballroom. We all look forward to the day when we can physically be together again. But meanwhile, there are advantages to these virtual events. For one thing, at our virtual awards banquet tomorrow, we don't have to eat a set, predictable meal, half of which we don't like and half of which we can't cut with the dull knives they provide us. And we don't have to get dressed up. The meeting space may be virtual, but my thanks are very real. There are more people to thank than I possibly have time to mention. To highlight just a few, I could never have gotten through these past 4 years without the wise counsel and institutional memory from Jeff Tom, our immediate past president. And can any of us imagine a time BL before Lisa? Lisa Thomas, our indefatigable treasurer, has brought our records and financial management practices up to the highest nonprofit sector standard. And how can I thank our technical operations group, the TOG, led by Vita Zavali and Phil Obregon, which has put our organization accessibly online and brought us into the computer age, while recognizing and respecting the fact that not all our members possess high-level technology skills. Thanks to all our other hardworking committees whose day-to-day efforts move this organization forward. I wish I could single out every board member I've worked with for the specific acknowledgments each of you deserves, and for the contributions in time, talent, and treasure each of you has made, and perhaps most of all, for your unwavering commitment to civil discourse and quality respect and mutual respect, even in the face of contentious and momentous decisions. You have upheld the best traditions of openness and fairness that will always remain the hallmark of our organization. Please join me in thanking these dedicated, conscientious board members and trust them to represent your best interests in the future as they have striven to do in the past. Nicole Pacheco, our operations manager, joined CCB only 3 years ago, but her thorough record keeping, her willingness and ability to learn new skills, including how to create Braille documents, and her responsiveness to the myriad requests that so many people make of her, have made her a mainstay of our organization. Thank you so much, Nicole. And of course, I can't forget Wireless Caller, AKA Gabe Griffith, who will succeed me as president tomorrow, unless he thinks better of it in time. For the past 2 years, he has phoned every Sunday evening to help formulate our plans for the week. He has assumed ever-increasing responsibilities, taking more and more of the burden off of my shoulders. Capping a lifetime of service to CCB, it has been my honor, and yes, my burden, to serve as your president. This is the fourth time I have come before you to give an annual report of our work, a sort of CCB State of the Union message. Because I cannot possibly cover all I wish to tonight, I invite you to read my article in the summer 2020 issue of the Blind Californian, where I review recurring themes over the 10 years I wrote columns, 6 as its editor and 4 as your president. I've often been asked, how many hours does being president really take? After all, Jeff did it for 10 years while holding down his full-time job at the Capitol, and Gabe faces the same challenge. You know, it's not that this job is literally a full-time, 40-hour-a-week endeavor. No, it's the unexpected early morning call from someone on the East Coast who forgot the time difference. It's the crisis flare-ups requiring immediate decision or action all too often without time for adequate consultation. It's the poignant call from the woman in Florida a few days ago seeking help for a blind man whose family turned him out into the COVID-infested Los Angeles streets, or someone seeking service for her friend needing after-school care for her 8-year-old blind child. It's the angry caller who never would consider joining a blindness organization, who nonetheless indignantly demands orientation and mobility services from us. It's the hurtful posting of an embarrassing private message by a disgruntled member to our public list. It's the destructive use of Facebook to complain about a CCB matter better handled within the CCB family. It's facing a serious allegation that the accuser wasn't willing to back up with evidence. My ability to concentrate on my CCB work suffered for months as a result of that incident. These have been years of challenge and change, years of success and failure, and years that bridge 2 generations of leaders. The challenges come as no surprise to most of us. Finances, membership, modernization, outreach, and prioritization of resources, to name the most familiar. But we face compelling new challenges as well. Challenges of inclusion that call upon us to incorporate diverse perspectives, needs, and identities into our work and mission. Challenges that test our ability to adapt the grassroots democratic strategy traditions of a member-controlled organization to the technological, economic, professionalized leadership and legal demands of today. Internal organizational issues may seem boring or remote, but without the coordinated work of many people, no modern organization can hope to accomplish very much. Let's turn first to the thorniest challenge, that of putting CCB on a sound financial footing, or put it more simply, getting the money. Our financial situation was dire when I took office, and sadly, it remains so now. For over 2 years now, most of us have taken no money for our CCB expenses. Driven in equal measure by desperation and creativity, we have undertaken a number of fundraising initiatives, regrettably without the desired results thus far. when we hired a CEO in September 2016. It was largely with the goal of pursuing grant opportunities and other fundraising endeavors. Until Paul Shane's departure in 2018, we bore the cost of his full-time position, but without the hoped-for return on investment. One major takeaway from this effort is the realization that grants, though seeming a logical source of funding, are a very mixed blessing. Our first successful grant was for a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, and FDIC summit and curriculum to inform our members how to better manage their finances and become more knowledgeable consumers of financial services. We met our obligation under the grant by distributing materials and holding a workshop during convention. Worthwhile work, to be sure, but carrying no financial gain for the organization. We spent a huge amount of time developing a 500-page grant application to the State Department of Rehabilitation for funds under the Older Individuals Who Are Blind, OIB, program, an effort in which we did not prevail. We received a VISTA grant, allowing us to fund three positions, but were prevented by the rules of the program from recruiting from outside the pool of VISTA volunteers or from taking the time needed to advertise the position widely in the blindness community. We outfitted three employees with computers and software, but they didn't work out. Taking into account the time spent on preparing the application, on training, and on technology, the effort cost us a great deal of money while yielding no benefit to our membership. We finally hit the jackpot at the end of 2018 when we received an Energy Upgrade California EUC grant to educate our population and other disabled and senior communities about the state's time of use program for saving money on the cost of gas and electricity. The grant enabled us to hire the talented James Collins, who hit the ground running when our first outreach officer quit after just 3 months. Because of further delays in funding cycles, we are still struggling until the next cycle begins. So in the end, we came to understand that grants and service contracts do not generally contribute to long-term financial stabilization, and while allowing us to do some useful work, often require recipients to alter their focus and priorities to fit the requirements of the funder. However, the search for grant funding had two incalculable benefits. We shortened our mission statement to increase the independence and equality for all Californians who are blind or low vision. That fits nicely into a 30-second elevator pitch. In March of 2017, the board adopted our case for support. Why do I mention these underfunding? Because a clear mission statement and compelling case for support explain who we are, what we do, and why anyone should support us financially. Such a document is indispensable for fundraising efforts in the modern nonprofit world. In 2017, for the first time ever, the board was obliged to request funds from our endowment, the Newell Perry Trust. Necessity has forced us to withdraw further funds from the trust in the following 2 years. And sadly, the fund will soon be reduced to its corpus if nothing changes. In the interim, we have tried a number of other fundraising ideas, a comedy club and silent auction, Canes Across California, fireworks sales, the dining in the dark, a delightful event, which I hope we can bring back when possible, but which in its initial iteration brought in little profit. Our single greatest loss outside the grant field involved the 2018 Major Gifts Ramp Up, MGRU, campaign undertaken with Disability Systems, Inc., DSI. The idea was deceptively, not to say beguilingly, simple, using various databases to identify a cohort of wealthy people in the Sacramento area, then reaching out to and engaging them through a structured series of steps, culminating in the recruitment and engagement of new and influential supporters. Without going into all the details, it is enough to say that the effort did not work and we had to pull the plug on the campaign and on our relationship with DSI. Here again, though, something of value did emerge from the rubble. Our streamlined case for support, with its 10 identified CCB wins since our founding in 1934, and our 4 action goals for CCB. Based in large part on this work, and thanks to the hard work of our publications committee led by Linda Perrell, we were able in 2018 and again in 2019 to send appeal letters to our entire contact list, and plans are underway for this year's campaign. It is difficult to determine how much of what people donate to CCB is directly attributable to this effort, but indications are that it is enough to warrant continuation. In September of 2019, we held our first telephonic auction modeled on those conducted by ACB. With heartening support from our chapters, members, and friends who donated or purchased items and services, we generated respectable profits of around $8,500, while also, we believe, generating a heightened level of engagement and awareness among our constituency. This year's auction is scheduled for September 20th, and despite hard times, we feel optimistic that we will certainly add to CCB coffers. Tomorrow, beginning our afternoon session, Patrick Netter, CEO of On the Move, together with CCB board member Steve Bauer, will officially launch our partnership with On the Move, manufacturer of 2 exciting mini treadmills we believe will prove of great value to the blindness community and that we hope will generate ongoing revenue for CCB. We have been working with these great folks since early in my term. Naturally, we had hoped to be further along with the project by now, but there have been predictable and unpredictable delays. But you will soon be able to order your own. Really? Really? Finally, in regard to fundraising, although you will understand why I can't go into detail, CCB is the co-beneficiary of a substantial trust left by a recently deceased, long-time, and much respected member. The trust is being challenged by a disappointed family member, but our council is strongly of the belief that our prospects are good for ultimately receiving the funds our late member and friend wanted us to have. The next broad area I want to touch upon is what I call bringing CCB into the 21st century. Statewide grassroots organizations like ours, with a decentralized local chapter-based structure, allowing considerable autonomy to the local groups and with much statewide decision-making authority reserved to the membership and annual convention, is not ideally situated to compete for funding in the modern world or even to easily comply with the multitude of reporting and documentary requirements of the nonprofit world. We've gone a long way, though, adopting a number of policies, including gift acceptance, travel and mileage, overtime, volunteer, member information, privacy, and others. We adopt an employee handbook, beginning the standardization of chapter and special interest affiliate reporting and accountability practices, such as officer information sheets, roster maintenance procedures, and so much more. But there is still much more to do, including the completion of sexual harassment policies and implicit bias prevention strategies, implementation of parallel policies at chapter level to those developed for the state organization, expanded use of the AMMS system to reach out to recently lapsed members, completion of a comprehensive members-only website area. When several board members first attended a workshop put on by NANO, the National Association of Nonprofit Organizations and Executives, we purchased what I still think is a valuable database with all kinds of reference resources, such as board evaluation instruments, models for developing strategic plans, and so much more. And yes, that infamous donor base for the entire country. Returning to a key area of communications, our website, like most websites, is an ever-evolving reflection of our needs and capacities, as well as increasingly of legal requirements. The site has been totally modernized with the help of Webmaster Erlene Hughes and the continued dedication and skill of the TOG. Progress will continue, and a secure members area where we can post sensitive documents, allow members to pay dues, file documents, download data, and so much more. But the world of paper still exists. We finally have been able to throw out those old rubber band burned stacks of out-of-date one-page flyers. With the development, thanks once again to our publications committee, of our new large postcard-sized flyer. We still need a revised trifold type brochure. Handouts work, as James Collins, our EUC educational officer, can attest as he hands them out at events he attends on our behalf. And if we could only have everything in Spanish, oh, what a brave new world. Our crowning achievement in governance is the adoption by this convention last year, after 2 years of hard work and a failed vote in 2018, of new bylaws. Bylaws without which we couldn't conduct official business, such as voting at this convention. So far as we know, CCB is the only ACB affiliate to incorporate the option for conducting business. We are dealing with bylaws changes this weekend, and future tweaking will obviously be necessary. Overlapping with fundraising and governance categories is another key innovation. Paul Shane taught us the importance of tracking our volunteer hours. Paul's data collection allowed us to estimate that in 2018, our members contributed $1.4 million at a value of about $24 per hour worth of volunteer time. For donors eager to assess member support and engagement as a measure of organizational worth, or who require in-kind contributions, such data are of immense and largely under-tapped value. Now the only trick is to get members and chapters to capture those data and maintain reliable records. If only to honor the work of our members, we must never overlook this most vivid evidence of your enduring commitment. In terms of streamlining procedures, we have made initial steps toward a master calendar. No need to wonder when the next board meeting happens. Every second Thursday. President's calls, fourth Mondays. Ultimately, we'd love to include recurring chapter events. We never again want to miss Greater Los Angeles' baseball-themed event. Third Saturday in October? In my mind, a related area which desperately needs work is managing and keeping good records. The most reliable records we have are those under Nicole's care. She can pull up former exhibitor and sponsorship packets, old officer information sheets, chapter tax forms, and so much more so we can revise and update without reinventing the wheel. Our treasurer, Lisa Thomas, has spent literally hundreds of hours untangling our financial records. Slowly but surely, she is bringing order from chaos. We save hundreds of dollars a year because Lisa provides accounting activities we once paid for. When records are well kept, amazing things can be accomplished. For example, Nicole has used the AMMS system, which goes back to 2014, to determine which members did not renew membership across several years. Where are chapter charters and constitutions? We don't know. Who have we given awards to? Other than Hall of Famers, and even that information isn't up to date, we don't have that information where it belongs, on our website. What about board and committee minutes? For instance, we need a single list of all board motions so we can go to one place to determine without difficulty what we did when. Two other areas of concern have undergone change and rethinking in the past few years: the annual convention and the council office. I cannot imagine how we ever managed to prepare for two in-person conventions a year. Organizing one, even before the pandemic, has become a year-round project. In November of 2016, Jean Lozano, our longtime convention coordinator, prepared a comprehensive report on conventions based on extensive input from our members. Now, in addition to a full-time convention committee, we have convention budget and post-convention profit loss analysis. I am proud of the sponsorships I have brought in, some $15,000 last year. Still, a lot of time has been spent scrambling for a hotel for 2019 after the Rancho Cordova Marriott bailed on us. To consider future in-person conventions, we must balance overall cost, food and beverage minimums, facility adequacy, transportation costs and accessibility, and compliance with ADA and state accessibility requirements. We look forward to a time when we can combine the best of virtual and in-person meetings to engage, inform, and energize the broadest range of our members. Continuing the subject of in-person gatherings, in 2018, we conducted two regional meetings in Southern California and the Fresno area. Based upon the positive response to those events, we spent a lot of time anticipating the possibility of holding several linked regional events as an alternative to meeting in a single statewide convention location. Intervening events forced us to move quickly to this year's virtual convention, but again, the things we learned will not be lost. Rob Turner has taken the lead in dragging us, many kicking and screaming, onto the Zoom platform. And it is no exaggeration to say that without Rob, this moment wouldn't be happening. We are using Zoom's webinar feature with its more advanced tools, and I hope we purchase it in the future. Yes, Virginia, there will always be a Zoom room. The council office has always held a special place in the hearts of our members. It was a place which people could visit, a source of assembling for print-related issues, a source of consultation and sharing on any number of subjects. In 2017, when our downtown lease ended, the board confronted a classic conundrum. Should we move to an office that was maximally accessible to public transit or to a less expensive but less transportation-friendly location in what many considered a more attractive neighborhood? This provoked one of the most heated debates and one of the most closely contested votes of my tenure. Having opted for the more convenient office, we have nevertheless been able to cut costs since by moving to a smaller suite in the same complex. But when our lease is up in 3 years, we should revisit the whole concept of an organizational office. In addition, we have begun implementing a rotational phone answering system whereby different members can answer the phones during times when Nicole, our one employee, is engaged in other matters that demand her full attention or is out of the office on business. We need to make more consistent use of this mechanism and the extensive resource guide which that team has developed. Now, if we could only get a decent physical phone system in the office. Amidst all this streamlining, one form of diminution we distinctly do not like is our decline in membership, which now stands at around 600. As evidenced by her presentation earlier this evening, Cindy's energy and enthusiasm are inspiring. I love her four E's: embrace, engage, empower, and effort. Because of better record keeping, we hope to improve member retention, especially under the guidance of our new membership committee chair, Guillermo Robles, who conducted such a fine virtual first-timers event on June 1st. Retention and recruitment are, of course, two sides of the same coin. We've lost chapters, Compton, Solano, San Diego, and soon we must deal with others currently missing in action or on life support. But at the same time, the CCB family does have a new affiliate, the California Alliance on Aging for Vision Loss, CAABL. Congratulations to Frank Welty, Bob Acosta, and all who have been involved in the amazingly rapid scaling up of this vibrant new affiliate. Also, while not an official affiliate, our diabetics group, the idea of which was so dear to the heart of our beloved Ken Metz, meets monthly. If adversity furnishes the occasion for resilience, the debacle of our major gifts ramp up campaign offered another superb illustration. I don't know what I would have done without 2019's 9-member Phoenix Committee, appointed to chart our future course, a committee which worked hard to envision a path forward for CCB. With sober realism, with respect for history, and with openness to the future, the Phoenix Committee charted the way to many of the initiatives currently defining our course and marking our revival. One cost-saving strategy where we're reluctantly forced to adopt in 2019 was suspension of Braille and large print publication of our quarterly magazine, The Blind Californian, ably and conscientiously edited by Mike Keithley and assistant editor Susan Glass. The BC continues to be published in an electronic version, and it is our hope to resume its production in other formats as soon as possible. However, there will be a special issue of the BC available in Braille and large print for $20 to commemorate the life and unequaled accomplishments and contributions of our beloved Kathy Skivers. I know Mike will include some of your heartfelt and heart-filled comments from this evening. Saving the best for last, our advocacy work remains, as it has always been, our proudest achievement as well as our raison d'etre. In the legislative realm, and increasingly in the administrative and judicial arenas as well, CCB has continued to punch far above its weight on behalf of its members and all Californians who are blind or low vision. During my term, we have worked in partnership with the California Foundation for Independent Living, the FIL, on successful structured negotiations with Airbnb to ensure that its lodging resources will be available on terms of equality to guide dog users and persons with mobility disabilities, and to ensure that its website and host to guest communications modalities will be accessible. Jeff sits at the table on Governor Newsom's long-term care task force, part of the governor's broader initiative on aging, which addresses the state's approach to understanding and meeting the needs of its growing senior population. At the invitation of Brian Bashan, CEO of the San Francisco Lighthouse, we have had preliminary discussions interrupted by the pandemic about joint efforts among California advocacy groups and service agencies aimed at securing state funding to help replace the resources lost to community-based services through elimination of non-vocational funding under the Federal Rehabilitation Act. Tomorrow, note our resolution in this area. We have worked to expand and ensure the reliability and quality of audio description in movie theaters, such as those in the AMC chain and our ongoing case with the Palladio Cinema Group. We have worked to expand voting accessibility in Alameda and San Mateo counties, as we learned this afternoon during Paul Spencer's presentation. We've made great advances in terms of accessible voting. We provided key input about autonomous vehicles, AV, accessibility rules development for the California Public Utilities Commission, CPUC, and have been kept constantly informed and very much in the mix by Gene Lozano's monitoring and advocacy on transportation and infrastructure regulations, and more recently on national parks reservation systems accessibility. In the impact litigation arena, we're still negotiating with the invaluable assistance of our public interest legal counsel on the Hinkle versus California Department of Health Care Services case seeking to obtain accessible documentation. We heard a little about this afternoon from Sean. Above all else, in the advocacy arena, we must be inspired by the impact we continue to have in the legislature. We were instrumental in sunsetting the useless and burdensome California Guide Dog Board, an almost unheard of success in the annals of bureaucracy where boards and agencies drift on in perpetuity. Through two key pieces of legislation, our guide dogs and their handlers are better protected against economic loss due to attack. In the educational context, legislation promoted by CCB has expanded and clarified the availability of O&M services to students and has given districts and individual teachers more authority and discretion to incorporate the extended core curriculum, ECC, into the range of special education services available to blind and low vision students. And bearing in mind that the greatest advocacy sometimes consists in what is prevented, there are those bad bills that we have helped to make less bad or persuaded legislators not to adopt. In all of this, Jeff Tom's singular skill and unparalleled experience in the legislative branch has been instrumental, and his role in the modern history of our civil rights cannot be overstated. He is ably assisted by our strong governmental affairs committee, co-chaired by Alice Turner and Artis Bazin. That committee will soon embark on training by Jeff to further serve our community in this all-important arena. I have characterized my administration as providing a bridge between generations. I represent the last leadership from the post-war or so-called baby boom generation. Now, with the accession of people like Gabe and Sarah, the proverbial torch is being passed to a new generation, from leaders in their 60s and 70s to those in their 30s and 40s. In view of the old battles still to be won and the new struggles yet to be fought, it is time that this should be so. Old ideas should be revisited and new ones tried. For all of us, regardless of age, and whether we are worn down or invigorated by challenges, one overarching fact irrefutably binds us together, spanning the generations. If there were no CCB, somebody would have to invent it. Let me express two final thank yous. First, my sweetie. Steve has been my rock every day for the past 4 years. He has contributed his time, talent, and our treasure to me and to the organization. In closing, then, I thank you, our CCB community, from the bottom of my heart, for the opportunity to serve this organization and our cause. And as immediate past president, I pledge to do whatever I can to advance our goals. So this is thank you, but not goodbye.
Thank you, Judy, for that. That definitely puts into perspective everything we've been through in the last several years. And we have definitely been lucky to have you at our helm through all of that. And are you sure you don't want to run for another term? I can still catch a red eye flight later tonight.
Yeah, right.
So thank
Steve,
you.
Can we have a president's door prize?
I was just going to ask you if you wanted to do one of those.
Yes, let's have a president's door prize.
I think
Steve.
We shall.
See,
my
Candy,
number hasn't
Candy.
Been called yet.
Steve Candy.
All right, Lisa, are you there?
I'm here.
You're there.
And right. The lucky number is 94, which is Kevin Burkery.
Kevin, all right. So Judy would be in touch. And you know, I don't think we've done too many door prizes yet tonight. Should we do one more? Should we do one of our $25 door prizes?
Let's do it.
And the winner of the next door prize is 144, which is Patricia Aminoff.
All right. We heard from Patricia a little earlier this evening. All right. And we'll probably do another door prize or so before we close. But